coming to you live like I do every night from the heart of your radio. I play a little sad and I play a lot of glad and a few old cheating songs. Here's open everybody out in radio land, find the love just as true as mine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this, what's left of this Friday morning. If you still want to try to get in, 251-343-0106 as we close out the week. Joining us now, he is our returning champion. Also, he is the nominee now for his the Senate seat he currently holds here in South Baldwin County. But my state senator, Chris Elliott, is with us. Senator, how are you?
I am doing well. Glad that primary election is behind us and very thankful to the voters of Senate District 7, or 32 for sending us back one more time with 73% of the vote.
Well, congratulations on that. I'm sure we talked about that a week ago. The news here, Supreme Court, right? That they essentially told this three-judge panel that you're not following our instructions from Calais, and kind of struck down Alabama's version of lawfare.
What a vindication for us and for the Alabama legislature as a whole. We are using the maps that we, a separate co-equal branch of government, are charged with drawing and that we drew legally. And that the courts tried to racially gerrymander against the will of the elected representatives of the people of the state of Alabama. And fortunately, we've got a president who appoints members to the Supreme Court who do not think that it is their job to legislate, but rather the legislature's job to legislate. And so I'm awfully thankful the U.S. Supreme Court certainly saw it the way Alabama saw it. I'm thankful for Attorney General Steve Marshall pushing as hard as he did in that case, and for Secretary of State Wes Allen for sticking up for us and making sure we got it done the right way, and that the people of Alabama will truly be represented by representatives that they choose, not gerrymandered ones, a federal court.
Well, and they, just how wrong the lower court got it here and the headache that caused. I think it was the pro tem, Garland Gudger, said we need to get some of this money back that we put into this.
I could not agree more. I think we ought to ask for it back. They wasted taxpayer money. They completely and totally misinterpreted the law. And then you know what they did? They did it again and again to try to impose their will of an unelected federal judge as opposed to the will of the people. And this ought to be a message to the federal judiciary, really around the country, that states are not going to put up with that. That they're going to be challenged, that they're going to be challenged all the way to the Supreme Court, and that this Supreme Court is going to back up the states.
I mean, that's the way you put it into some of this. There's some kind of punitive action, and there's not much. These guys are appointed to the bench for life, but this has to be done. We have to pursue this for the sake of the future of this kind of system we have now.
Well, we do. And listen, I think the Alabama case is very important, just as the Louisiana case was very important in the Calais decision, by furthering the Supreme Court's stance on redistricting issues. And so as other states go through these challenges, hopefully their lower courts will realize, no, guys, they really meant what they said, and you can't do this. And so hopefully other states, will have these issues resolved at the district court or, at a circuit court level, federal circuit court level, and they won't have to go all the way to the Supreme Court, because those judges will see not just the Calais decision, but we'll see the decision in Milligan here and say, no, we don't want any, we're not going down that path, we're going to lose. And so hopefully they'll see that, and hopefully we'll end up in a spot where we see these types of changes happen nationwide. And what has happened since the VRA, the Voting Rights Act, was initially passed, has been an artificial you know, an artificial weight put on black voting populations and Democrat, you know, representation that came along with that sometimes. And so we're seeing a reversal of that that will have a waterfall effect across the country. And I'm glad of that. I said that's what's supposed to happen. It was artificial to begin with.
You know, having watched these redistricting efforts over the years, I mean, that's always there's always sort of this albatross, you know, that they're like, look, we had to do this way to check this box, check this box, check this box. We had to be very careful with what we say. We can't be transparent because we're, you know, there's so much risk adverseness in the system here. That I think it's just bad. It's just not good government, or it leads to bad government. And hopefully this will kind of put a stop to some of that.
It does. And it will put a stop to what I think is this reverse racism, right? And so I'm not afraid to say that. I think that's exactly what was going on. We were artificially trying to increase the, you know, the voice of a certain segment of this population. And here's the ironic thing. In the middle of all of this happening, what happened? We had an election where we picked up yet another black Republican in the Alabama House. So that's the irony of all of this is as we try to artificially say, no, we need to, you know, if you're black, you're a Democrat. We ended up electing another black Republican. We need to stop looking at skin color and do what Martin Luther King said and judge people by the content of their character.
Right. And a black Republican beating, and it wasn't just an open, it was an incumbent, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and then that's what it happened up in the Shoals, guys. But this, this sort of industry that's always been an impediment to what, you know, Alabama's constitutional obligations, which is a reapportionment and every census, it's always been, okay, well, we're going to do this, but we know we're going to get sued. Like there's a whole perverse incentive there where this sort of cottage industry, Mark Elias and Eric Holder and guys like that, you know, sure, they're working on behalf of Democrats and Democrat interest. However, there was a self-enrichment here that really fueled this fire.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, until now, until President Trump, until this United States Supreme Court, you know, until an attorney general like Steve Marshall and his chief counsel, Catherine Robertson, we didn't have anybody that would really go to bat for us. And so, you know, this has vindicated the Alabama legislature. I feel very vindicated in the maps that we drew originally and that we stuck to it, that they were legal at the time, that they were principally right as well. And I think that's an important thing, and that we stood up to, you know, everybody saying, oh, no, you got to follow this rule and you're going to get sued. Well, fine, but this is the right thing to do. And ultimately, we were proven correct. And I'm glad of that. This country is finally, you know, turning a corner from the last 50 years of running around with this namby-pamby political correctness and all of this, you know, artificial, you put it as enrichment of certain classes at the behest of others. We've rolled back CRT and DEI. We are judging people based on their, you know, their work ethic and again, the content of their character, not their skin color. This country's finally getting over itself.
Right. Well, it's just there's also the question of fairness here, that because we have to live under the system that other states don't. And, you know, and okay, well, why is it in place? Well, y'all were bad actors. Well, that was 60 years ago. And it's a lot of, you know, you and I weren't even born yet, but we are still being held by this. And that just seems just wholly unfair, no matter how you try to make that argument.
It's the age old argument of sins of the father, right? And so our judicial system doesn't work like that. You hold individuals accountable for their individual actions, but certainly not what we did in 1950. And that's what the Voting Rights Act really did. If you go back and look at it, and this whole notion of preclearance where the Justice Department was having to sign off on things prior to us, again, the legislature, you know, passing them, we're finally out from underneath that. That was one of the reasons it was so important to handle the maps like we did. That and a timing issue together, you know, meant that we had to do what we did in the special session. And again, vindication all around, country's headed in the right place. I'm thrilled.
I think this, that they got greedy, that you look at Alabama, you know, had Milligan not come along, had they not been pushing for a second Democrat seat, because that's what this is. This is, we have a Congress right now where the margins are so thin between the R's and the D's, everything counts. And they were trying to socially engineer a bigger majority. They got greedy. If they had just relied and left 6-1, you and I would not be talking about this today.
You're exactly right. But also, I'm going to give credit to the president here, right? Who else would have pushed in the middle of an election cycle to go change maps, right? Make this push. And I give a lot of credit to him. And then, of course, the courts got greedy. The Democrats got greedy. And you have some Republicans, folks that were appointed, you know, by the president, by other Republicans, that just, I don't know why. I don't know what they're thinking, but their principles are off, and their decision making was wrongheaded. And again, the Supreme Court's, you know, shown him that the pendulum always swings. They got greedy, and so the pendulum is swinging the other direction, and we're correcting their greed.
We're joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. I guess the next question is, you know, and you probably hear it, getting to a 7-0 map, that's going to have to wait, obviously, but you think it happens in 27?
I think it happens certainly by the 2030 redistricting. It may happen sooner, but we were not going to be able to do that in the special session we just had. It would have restarted the entire court process and proceedings, and we would have ended up with nothing. And so you had to take a bit of an incremental approach and understand not just clock management from a time standpoint, but field position, right? And play the field position too. And that's exactly what we did. But yes, I think the fact that we're out from underneath the Department of Justice preclearance and the fact that we have this Supreme Court ruling lets us move forward with a 7-0 map. And I expect that the legislature will study that, look at that, and find the appropriate time to do that. But it's important to play the long game on this, right? I don't want us to get greedy either and end up in a spot where we do something that lands us back in court, where if we could have just waited until 2030, get it then, get it done, and it'll be like that for a very, very long time. And that's what we need to watch, not just clock management, but field position.
So you think that, you know, the 2028 election, that it won't, you think it could be as long as 2030 till 7-0?
Well, typically we redistrict every 10 years. That's the typical cycle. And so I think that is the certain thing, that we'll end up with a 7-0 in 2030, I guess 2031, by the time the census numbers come out, is when we'll be looking at that. So I know that will happen. The question is whether or not we do that, we do another redistricting here in the near future or not. That is certainly something that's up for discussion. We need to look at the merits of that, have those conversations with our attorneys. I'm all for getting all we can get when we can. But we also need to be very careful that we don't get greedy either. But I am certain we'll end up with a 7-0 map here in the next, you know, 4+ years. The question is just whether or not we end up with one in the next two.
Well, the problem with waiting till 2030 is the census isn't till 2030, and the map wouldn't go into effect till 32, right?
That is correct. And again, that's how typically this has been done, you know, for time immemorial, right, is we've redistricted every 10 years. All I'm saying is I am certain of that timeline. I am not certain of whether or not we redistrict before then. We may be able to do that, and those are discussions that are happening right now. And if that is something that we can do, we should do, but we need to be smart and deliberate and pensive about it and make sure that we do it in a way that guarantees success like we just had here, and not something that takes us backwards, because I don't want to go backwards.
Because you would have to do, like, my assumption would be, and I know we're putting the cart before the horse here, just like it is a new census. And when they draw the maps, they have all the hearings, they have all the, you know, the meetings there. And I don't know where the new apportionment room would be, but I've done my show from the old one plenty of times in the state house with all the maps on the wall. But the theoretically, you would have to do all the things you would have to do to turn around and do them 2, 3, 4 years later.
That is correct. And so the question is the juice worth the squeeze? And the answer to that might be yes. Again, you pointed out how close things are in Washington. And if we feel like we need to and can move forward with that, we should absolutely look at it. And if having Republican control, for instance, of Congress for 2 years or 4 years is in the balance of one more congressman from Alabama, that votes with Republicans, then yeah, we ought to go ahead and do it. We just have to go through the process that you just outlined. And we've got a legislative session coming up here in February. Let's look at it. Let's get our ducks in a row and let's move through the process. If that's something that, that we're able to do legally, which I think is, as we watch these court cases come out and these decisions come out, is a very real possibility.
Senator, we got to leave it there, but we always appreciate your time. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks so much for having me. Y'all have a great weekend.
State Senator Chris Elliott there. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Dixieland.